Hey listeners, welcome to Trust in Tech, where we have conversations with people helping the internet and society thrive. Alice here. As a reminder, the views stated in this episode are not affiliated with any organization, and they only represent the views of the individuals. Hi, I'm here today with Netta Fateh, and we're going to have a very interesting conversation. I'm sure we've done a lot of prep for this conversation. So, Netta, welcome. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me here, Alice.
Can you give our listeners a bit of an introduction of who you are, what you're up to, what should folks know about you?
Sure. So this year, I'm currently a tech policy fellow with UC Berkeley, Goldman School of Public Policy, and I'm currently an employee fellow at the Institute for Rebooting Social Media at BKC. I was previously working in industry as a software engineer in privacy and security for a few years, and just last year, I made this transition into pursuing this field of public interest tech and taking fellowships to see what I could learn and do in this area.
Yeah, having fellowships in trust and safety, integrity adjacent fields is a relatively new thing, especially for people who are practitioners and not career academics. So I love to see it. It's great.
Yeah, it's been a great way to get my foot in the door and to meet other really brilliant people doing groundbreaking work in this space.
I imagine that brings us to what we're going to be talking about today. I'm sure you've had a lot of great conversations with people around this topic. So today we're talking about how tech workers, specifically people working in integrity and trust and safety, so our listeners, hopefully, how people can speak up against bias or harm that might be perpetuated by platforms, even the ones that they're working for. And that can be harm in many different ways that we'll get into a little bit. But sort of conversation around activism from the inside, I suppose. And it's a big topic and it's a difficult one, but I think it's important to have and to tackle and to think about, because so many of us these days are having to make moral or ethical decisions around where we work, what we work on, what we want to speak up about, what we feel safe speaking up about or not, how that affects our career and our jobs. It's sort of increasingly impossible to not come into contact with some of these issues at some point, given how difficult the world is right now. So that's our topic for today. Where should we get started? What do you think is happening in the industry as a whole, and why is it important to talk about this stuff now?
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think there's a lot of ethical issues that come into conversations in our workplaces, especially as tech workers, and things that people are just uncertain about how much they can discuss or bring up. And I think this new generation is confronting a lot of these moral dilemmas head on, and we're feeling more comfortable bringing them up. It is still very difficult to navigate these topics when it's divisive in certain spaces, but you know, as integrity workers, as trust and safety workers in particular, we really should be ensuring that we're engaging in these issues and conducting ourselves with moral clarity and courage as much as we can. And it also helps, as we're having this discussion today, to contextualize the points around the circumstances in our world. And I'm really grateful to have this platform to talk to you about my own personal experiences and about what's going on in the world right now and the ongoing humanitarian crisis in the Middle East and how that's being fueled by technology and social media. And even speaking beyond just the tech and social media aspect, how as human beings, we can't turn a blind eye to a population that's enduring starvation and is being slaughtered on their own land. And it's a crisis that's affecting many of us deeply, whether we have ties to the region or not. And I'm really looking forward to sharing more of how this intersects with all of our roles and responsibilities as tech workers during our discussion today.
I started out in college 20 years ago now, thinking I wanted to be an activist, and then ended up on like a career activist, working in political science, and then realized I didn't want to do it and it wasn't quite right for me. Went on a complete two different career paths completely, and now more and more I'm finding in my job I'm thinking about ethics and how human beings are treated and what is important and how can we ensure that people are having equal experiences on the platforms we support, or if, you know, human rights that aren't being stomped all over, or, you know, any number of other topics. So it's interesting that things have sort of come full circle for me, and I think probably for a lot of other people who are drawn to work in integrity and in interest and safety. And I know for you, I've been following what you've been doing for a little bit, and you had a really interesting conversation with Annika Collier Neverly about how tech workers from underrepresented and marginalized communities are, how they're doing. And specifically, she had this really interesting point in a paper that she wrote about Black people's experiences working in trust and safety, which I'll put in the show notes. It was so good. But she talked about compelled identity labor, and I thought that was really interesting. It was something that I had thought about before, but not framed in exactly the same way. And the conversation that you had with her was, it was really illuminating for me. I found it incredibly helpful, and sort of, it made me think about how we have a situation right now where people working in trust and safety teams, integrity teams, are expected to thread this very fine needle between not speaking up enough if they're compelled to make statements on behalf of their identity and their community, or not speaking up too much because some topics are divisive and difficult and employers would rather that you don't have them. And that's a very difficult balance to have. So I don't know. I just wanted to say thank you for having that conversation with her and doing it publicly. It was really helpful for me.
Of course. Yeah. I actually met Annika last summer at RightsCon, and we were in the same session, and she had stood up to make a comment or ask a question, and just something about what she'd said really resonated with me. Immediately went over and introduced myself after the talk, and we just connected, both of us having been trust and safety workers, having worked in big tech, and like she really put into words a lot of what I was feeling, you know, that compelled identity labor as someone who's a minority in this industry, and feeling this burden that there's so much we can do to support our communities within these systems, but often feeling unsupported, not having the resources, and sometimes even facing retaliation or backlash. And so, you know, being able to invite her to come speak at the Institute for Rebooting Social Media was amazing. And it was a really, really timely fireside chat that we had, I think around a month ago. We talked a lot about the feelings that both of us had when we were in industry, feelings of tokenization, and how often there's this power asymmetry that makes it difficult to speak up when we are experiencing microaggressions in the industry, and also feeling like we're in very privileged positions at these companies and wanting to do more. I love how you said earlier about how you fell into career activism, and I kind of fell into this employee activism at some point, but didn't know that's what it was, or didn't know how to describe what I was doing other than the fact that I was in this place at this time feeling like there was more that I could say or do. And I think a lot of us feel that privilege and feel this urgency or need to say something, but not really knowing how to do that. What are the risks in speaking up? What are different avenues to bring more attention to the things that we care about? And so we talked a lot about that, lack of diversity in leadership, not being in the right rooms. And I'm hoping maybe we can even link that talk in the description of this podcast too.
So, yeah. If I'll definitely put a link in there. So let's back up a little bit, because you referenced a little bit how you started to think about this, but I'd love to know, like, how did all of this start for you? How did you start thinking about these things in, like, a more clear way and linking it to what you're working on right now?
So I thought I would start with a story that I actually just thought back to this morning, around, you know, hindsight is 2020. So I feel like as interesting as my career trajectory has kind of been, the different things I've done, I feel like there's always been these common threads of caring about what I'm working on and being really mission driven. And, you know, I studied computer science. I got my bachelor's and master's from UC San Diego. And I was also the student speaker at our graduation ceremony with the Jacobs School of Engineering. And the School of Engineering, we take this oath, this engineering oath, where we make this commitment to innovate responsibly and uphold strong ethical values. And in my speech during that ceremony, I talked about how as engineers and computer scientists, we can use our skills in the realm of public service and tech for good and all of that. Not really including like ethics in the speech, because I didn't even know this concept of tech ethics existed, you know, but I think I fundamentally just cared about what I was working on and how this was affecting people. And that's what kind of led me into specializing in systems and security. I took a cybersecurity class and I started interning on various privacy teams, really wanting to, you know, protect users that are using these platforms and try my best to be on the side of quote unquote good, you know, if I were to enter the industry, which I did eventually. I'll probably speak more on my experiences working at Facebook later on. But I think there, you know, in the past, there hasn't been a lot of conversations about responsible technology. As a computer science student and as a software engineer, it wasn't really clear how I could be thinking critically about the tech that we're building. And working at a tech company, it's not really clear what your responsibilities are, what you can do outside of the projects and tasks that you're given to work on. And it's really easy to just compartmentalize your work and just do what's asked of you and not really acknowledge or understand what the broader context is in which what you're building is being used. And that's why I'm so, so grateful for having found, you know, these spaces and discovered what responsible technology means and what public interest tech is, and having the Integrity Institute to be around folks that are at this intersection of practitioners and technologists and people that fundamentally, I feel like, care about what they're working on and how this is affecting people. And personally, I've learned and grown throughout the years too. And, you know, as an engineer, I used to think and reason about things in a really binary way where, you know, I would just think really logically. And like either something works or it doesn't, either your code runs or it doesn't. But in like researching a lot of what's, you know, happening in this space, you realize there's a lot of gray areas, you know, in the decisions that you make when you're working in trust and safety. There's a lot of like knowledge and understanding that it takes to tackle the issues that are coming up in this field. And I'm, you know, like I mentioned, hindsight is 2020, and I realize how there are these common threads in the way I was feeling about the type of work I wanted to do that all kind of like led me to this point in my career.
I love that you found ways to think about ethical applications of computer science and engineering, even though it wasn't directly presented to you in such a way. And I think like practical resources on ethics for tech workers would be so good. Like what should we be teaching in schools, or what is being done already in some schools that can prepare people who are building the things but maybe should be thinking more about why as well?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to learn that my alma mater, UC San Diego, is offering a course on race, gender, and computing. That was something we didn't have 6 years ago. And it was just talking about social constructs and technology and how tech affects different groups of people. And I like came and spoke to the students and just talked about my own journey and transition in the field.
So it's super interesting, as my dad was a computer science professor at UC San Diego.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't think I realized that you went there, but he, yeah, he passed away a long time ago, so you wouldn't have crossed paths, but he was definitely thinking a lot about technology and ethics and computer science. He was a Buddhist. I was raised as a Buddhist. My dad was a Buddhist. And so he did a lot of thinking around like Buddhist ethics and philosophy as it relates to AI and computing and all of that stuff. So it's just, I have no idea if he taught any classes about that stuff or not, but I don't know. I like to think, maybe his legacy trickled down a little bit to when you were there.
Definitely. I feel like a lot of us have been thinking about it, but it's really great to see a lot of it being formalized in different ways, either like courses that you can take, events that you can attend. Or even like these fellowships that we're talking about now that are at the intersection of tech and ethics and human rights. And in regards to your question about like resources, one that I've known about for a while, and I know the author and the person that worked on it, Matt Mitchell, it's this online guide called The Tech Workers Handbook that shares information that allows tech workers to make informed decisions and think about if and how they should speak up about different issues as it relates to the public interest if they're working at a tech company. And so it's great to have that and to have mentors in this space that, you know, are really embedded in it and can kind of give us guidance as we're looking to explore more of the work that can be done in tech ethics. And, you know, even last week at the institute that I'm at, Institute for Rebooting Social Media, we had a whole whistleblowing workshop bringing folks together to think about, you know, how people would feel more comfortable speaking up, having, you know, better infrastructure or having safe spaces to even like combat the stigma around like whistleblowing and just providing more resources so people understand the pros and cons and can think about the consequences before making any decisions.
Let's fast forward past your schooling. You then became an official tech worker after college. And you mentioned that you ended up at Meta. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So I had interned with them the summer before I graduated with my master's. I was on a privacy team. I was working on the anti-scraping team, later known as external data misuse. And when I joined full time, I really wanted to stay in the privacy space. Like I'd mentioned, I cared about protecting user data, making sure that they feel like their information safe and secure and all of that. And I'd always like worked on privacy and security teams throughout the 3 years that I was there. And I really believed in the mission of these platforms and bringing the world together. And I'm ethnically Egyptian, and I'm really familiar with how Facebook was instrumental in enabling the Arab Springs and the revolutions in our country in 2012. So there's a lot of ways these platforms and tools can be used for good. It was while, you know, I was working at Meta in 2021 that I actually saw and even like, you know, heard stories from friends that were using Facebook and Instagram, that friends that were activists and journalists that were using it as a tool to raise awareness and the feelings that they had felt in being censored or not having these tools really serve them for what they needed it for. And in May 2021, there was a situation in Palestine when six Palestinian families were going to be evicted from their homes in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. And this led to a whole wave of activism. And a lot of folks were using Instagram, Facebook to share things related to what's happening on the ground there. And we were witnessing both as like users of these platforms and as employees that were part of this community, how the platform was really failing this group and how there were a lot of mistakes that were happening. There was the hashtag Al-Aqsa, which is a holy site that was blocked on Instagram. There was really vital content that was being demoted and not being surfaced to users that was really important to raise awareness about what's happening, and mistakes in over-moderation and the censoring of activists and journalists. And so while I was there, that's what really like opened up my eyes to, you know, tech can be really good, but also there's some limitations and harms that it causes. And even like learning about the technical deficiencies in the systems we were building and how languages like Arabic and Hebrew have been historically underinvested. And all of this translates to like a very tangible real world impact in putting people's lives at risk in these, like in these times of crisis. And so I was there for a little over 2 years. And it was in May 2021 when I started learning about tech policy because of a lot of the policy decisions that were being made and understanding how this is affecting different groups. And then when I was affected by the layoffs, November 2022, I took a step back and really started thinking about the direction I wanted to take my career. I took a couple months off to just kind of explore what else was out there. And like I'd mentioned, there are these common themes of wanting to do tech for the public good or think critically about technology. And I started talking to some of my mentors and folks that I worked with in the past that worked with other nonprofits or groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And that eventually led me to finding out about the Berkman Klein Center, about the Stanford Internet Observatory, and these spaces where you can do a lot of this work that's at that intersection. And it really opened up my eyes. And I just think the world that we're living in now, it's hard to really divorce ethics from a lot of what we're working on in any industry. And so I'm glad that I'm, you know, realizing that there's a lot that needs to be done and to be at this pivotal space and time to be able to contribute to that.
I appreciate people who are on the outside bringing light to issues that are happening. I also sometimes get frustrated because, you know, for many years, I was head of trust and safety at a pretty major platform and was making all the decisions and the trade-offs. And, you know, there are some criticisms that are correct, but also some that just like lack so much context and nuance and understanding. And I just like put my head in my hands and I'm like, oh, if only you knew, if only I could share, like, yeah. I'm trying my best. And so, you know, from my outsider perspective today, and, you know, take it for what it is, because again, like, I don't work at Meta or any other major platform, but it seems like there's kind of two themes that I've noticed through the industry in general. And one is, like, historically, the major platforms that are trying to be everything to everyone, they're sort of these like neutral town square free speech type platforms. And that was the promise of the internet in the 90s when, you know, everything was being created. And then, you know, in the early 2000s when social media sort of came on. And the idea was the internet is like this open frontier and we can all share around the world and it'll be great. But the only way that works is if you're sort of this neutral platform and don't take a stand on anything that's seen as like a controversial political issue, because obviously then you're going to lose users and you're going to make them mad, because you can't, if you take a side, you can't be on both sides at once. Mm-hmm. And then possibly because these companies are trying to appear neutral, and I don't think there's any such thing as truly neutral, because saying you're neutral is taking a side, right? And doing nothing is doing something. And so I personally don't believe there's any such thing as neutral, even if folks try to. But, you know, even if they're sort of going to this idealized view of neutrality, then that gives them an excuse or a philosophy that means that they're not necessarily going to heavily invest in teams of experts in these really specialized areas, especially around political conflict or trust and safety or any area that isn't just trying to smooth things over. And so that's where the sort of lack of nuance and lack of investment comes in, because if Meta is insisting that they're not going to have political content and on Instagram or Threads, and you just like can't talk about politics, then why do they need to invest heavily in political experts, right? So I don't know. I think I know for sure there's like lots of brilliant people who have worked at these companies and thought about these things, but from the outside, at least, it seems like there could be more. What do you think? Do you think that's a fair assessment, especially as somebody who did work there for a little bit?
Yeah. No, I agree with everything that you're saying. And going back to that earlier point about thinking, you know, working internally within the system or being this external voice against it or trying to improve it, that's something that took me a while to really grapple with and to figure out where I stand. Obviously, that's like constantly evolving and changing. And I remember when I was at the company, I had friends that, you know, were leaving when these situations would happen out of principle. You know, they don't want to work at a company that, you know, is, they just they disagreed with a lot of the decisions that were being made and just left. But for me, I would do like this analysis of, I feel like maybe there's more impact that I can have with the position and privilege that I have there and the access to resources internally. And so, you know, I always struggled with figuring out, should I stay? Should I leave? How much could I really do from the outside? But I think it's not as binary as that. And like I mentioned, I'm trying to like get out of that mindset. I think there's a lot of pressure that we can put on all different sides, and that you need well-intentioned people both on the inside and the outside. And so that's something that I'm like trying to come to terms with. And, you know, in October, once everything started escalating in the Middle East and in Palestine, I remember I was like, I wish I was still at the company. You know, we were doing a lot in terms of bringing back accounts that had like restrictions put on them and just being that voice. But then I realized, you know, even when you're there at the company, your hands are pretty tied with how much you can or can't say. And friends that were working in big tech, like in the past year, have said that there's been a lot of crackdown on even like internal conversations to raise awareness about certain things and internal censorship. So it's not easy, like wherever you are, and it's just a matter of doing the best that you can. And I also like how you spoke on the topic of, you know, companies that choose to err on the side of neutrality. And I do agree that I feel like that's like not possible when what we're building is undeniably being used to oppress, surveil, and censor marginalized communities. And at the end of the day, these are platforms and tools that can be used however they're used, but the companies that are building them have a responsibility to ensure that there's adequate resourcing and prioritization in all regions and in any crisis situations that emerge, especially with what's happening now with the stakes this high. And it's been particularly jarring to witness everything that's been happening since October and the ways that technology and these platforms have played a role in Israel and Palestine. And this is an example that I've shared a couple of times that happened last November because it was such an egregious mistake. And despite like understanding the technical limitations that caused this to happen, it's still really hard for me to wrap my head around and understand how something like this could have actually been in production and for us to have seen it. And that was when auto translations on Instagram bios were translating Palestinian and Arabic text following it to Palestinian terrorists.
I remember seeing that.
Yeah, it like made headlines. It was first reported by 404 Media. All of us were like testing it. Like, is this actually real? Who pushed this into production, right? Until we realized it was because the AI system that it was likely being trained on was being trained on this influx of hateful comments on the platform and led to these hallucinations, you know? And it was just extremely disappointing that just furthers the stigmatization of Arabs and is honestly just completely unacceptable. And you start to wonder, like, how did this actually happen? Why did we not have guardrails set up to ensure that this doesn't happen? You know, how can we make sure this won't happen again? And so that's just one particular example out of the many. And that is like where we come in, you know, as engineers and as trust and safety workers who should be questioning how emerging technologies like generative AI are used without being thoroughly tested at times, and how some of the features and products that they're being used in can be biased and unfair and harmful. And how AI also has deadly outcomes. And the fact that there's an AI-driven targeting platform called The Gospel that was deployed in Gaza is abhorrent and has like significantly heightened the civilian death toll there. And the fact that there's facial recognition technologies and geolocation tools like Pegasus that were developed in Israel and are tracking Palestinians for decades. And this population has been under intense surveillance on their own land. And so all of this are just like examples of how you can't just think about the tech that we're building in a vacuum. You know, this is having tangible impact and people are losing their lives because of the way this is deployed. And going back to, I guess, talking about like the tech workers experience, I worked at Meta. I have friends that are working at Google and Amazon. And in the past few years, there's been a big push against Project Nimbus within the context of Israel and Palestine. This contract that they have provides cloud services to the Israeli military and government, and it fuels the ongoing apartheid and subjugation of Palestinians. And so the fact that like these tech employees are using their voice and are signing letters and boycotting and protesting speaks volumes to the integrity and the stance that they're taking. You know, like I remember attending one of these No Tech for Apartheid protests when I was in Seattle, and it was happening in all of the major tech hubs. And I'm sure everyone at this point has also seen the clip of the Google Cloud engineer that stood up during a keynote just recently when he said he refuses to build technology that powers genocide. He stood up and said, no tech for genocide, no tech for apartheid, was being escorted out. And he took a very powerful and public stance that, you know, cost him his job. But it's these sorts of actions that are needed to express the outrage that we all feel to eventually change the status quo. And in the circumstances that we're in now, like, there's been no precedent set for how dire it's become. And so there's no precedent how we should be thinking about engaging on this issue and bringing it up in our workplaces.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking and about some of the ways that people can think about how they want to speak up on whatever, you know, whatever topic is important to them. And specifically now, you know, there's some very urgent ones for sure. But, you know, I think that it's also worth recognizing that, you know, there are consequences like losing your job, and people should be able to think about these things in like a balanced way. I really appreciated what you said earlier about how you think there's need for people inside the companies to be doing work, and there's also need for people to speak up and say they can't do it anymore. And those two things together are what is going to bring about change. If everybody leaves, then the only people left inside the company are going to be ones who aren't taking a principled stance. And if everybody stays, then people might think everything's fine. And so there's room for different approaches, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the critique or constructive criticism that we're giving is because, like, we use these platforms, you know, and we want them to be better and we want them to be more equitable. And so, I mean, when I was at the company, I wasn't, and I never have been, I'm not this burn it all down type of mentality. It's more of, let's think about how we can fix these to make it better.
There's an infinite number of, like, ethical projects and problems that people can work on, and so many larger, like, structural issues at play around what companies are investing their time in or thinking about what they see as worth investing in, especially when you're talking about marginalized communities, small groups of people relative to an enormous user base of, you know, millions or billions of people. And, like, how can we think about going up against something so structurally difficult when we're individuals with our own thing that we want to be prioritized mm-hmm. among a landslide of terrible things in the world today.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no, it can be really, really intimidating. Like you said, just, like, thinking about everything that you're up against, all these structural issues. But I do really believe in collective power and the ability to organize, engage with a lot of different people to speak up about things. And grassroots efforts and organizations go a long way, you know, even if we aren't in those, like, positions of leadership yet, you know, we can make it there or find a different way to make sure our voices are heard. And all of us, whether we're in the tech industry or anywhere else, can equip ourselves with, like, the knowledge to make the best decisions and to stand firmly against things that go against our values and morals. Ignorance is a choice, and especially as integrity and trust and safety workers, when we're doing the work, we understand how important it is to include different perspectives and various stakeholders in these conversations to make sure the decisions are as inclusive as possible, or, you know, challenging when the decisions seem like they're one-sided and bring up the need for having diverse folks in the room. And that was one thing that I talked to Anika about. It was like this need when these decisions are being made to involve the people that are quote unquote doing the work, you know, the people that are more in those operations or content moderation roles that are seeing, like, what is being spread on these platforms, but are really part of, like, the decision making and how these systems are being built. And so involving their perspectives in the rooms, and most of them are also folks that are diverse, is really, really valuable in terms of like changing these systems to be more equitable.
I love that so much, especially because I happen to work now for a company that is, you know, a like provider of these moderators from all over the world. And part of why I was interested in taking this job and thinking about it is because I think there's enormous value in listening to moderators and getting point of view of people who are on the ground floor, seeing things all day, every day, noticing what the users are actually doing, interacting with that content. That's how I started my career, was as a content moderator. So I have that perspective because I've done that work myself. And some of the most valuable insights that I've gotten as a leader, as a VP in a company, heading up all of trust and safety, has been when like a moderator felt brave enough to come to me with something and say, hey, have you seen this? But we can't rely on those folks to be that brave. We need to create avenues for them to share what they know and feel comfortable and feel supported. We outsource a lot of the worst work to people in the global majority, but then we don't listen to them when they have important things to say. And I think there's a world in which we respect their wisdom and their insights, and where it's a benefit to have workers all over the world with these local perspectives. So sorry to go off on a little rant there, but something that I've been thinking about. I'm only 5 weeks into this job, and so I'm sure I'll have much more nuanced feelings later, but I think there's like enormous potential for conversation on these things. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no, of course. And I had no idea you started out as a moderator and you worked your way to where you are now. I think that's very inspiring and impressive, and something like these sort of stories I think are so important to highlight and to speak more about. And like you were saying, speaking with the folks that are on the ground doing this work and amplifying their voices are so important. And maybe even moving like and having a restructuring of just the way these organizations are, from like a top-down approach to like really centering the voices of the people that are affected by it and the people that are in these companies and doing the work. Don't know how we could get to that point, but it's something to think about. And I think having people like you in these roles, and hopefully, you know, these practitioners that are thinking more critically about tech and ethics and human rights will be able to make that change. And like I'd mentioned earlier, I think we really need this diversity in leadership, because a lot of the decisions that are made appear one-sided because a lot of, you know, people that represent a majority of users aren't really in those rooms when the decisions are being made. And the people that are in the policy forums and are able to vote and change policies that don't represent a majority of the user base is, that can be problematic. And so my hope is to whoever's listening, if you're an integrity worker or a computer science student or someone who's an early career IC, is to like really think big and know that the positions that we're working our way up to will allow you to move the needle and spark that change that we need, and to come into it, you know, well-intentioned and wanting to really change things for the better.
I love that. I think stay optimistic is a good.
What's funny is that ever since I made this transition into public interest tech, I would half jokingly say I've never been so much of a cynic, you know, because like I'd mentioned, all of this gray area that I realized, you know, it's not just about, okay, I built this feature, works, I've tested it, I'm shipping it, all is good, you know. You just think about how tricky, you know, trust and safety is as a whole, and how there's always going to be impossible trade-offs you need to make. And this idea of being inclusive to everyone, in fact, isn't, you know, it's going to, you know, you most of the time exclude the most vulnerable. So it's just, you know, even though I say like, I've become more of a cynic, I feel like there's moments where you just need to recenter yourself. And the folks that I'm meeting that are doing really amazing work gives me hope that, you know, we can do really important work in this space.
Yeah, I agree. I love that. Thank you for such a good conversation. I think there's a lot for people to think about. What are some takeaways that that you hope that people leave this conversation with? How do you want to end it?
Yeah. I mean, I hope anyone who's joined today just understands, as a tech worker, as an integrity worker, the amount of privilege and agency and voice all of us have in our own circles, you know, whether that's just with the people that we're interacting with on a daily basis or within this industry as a whole and our positions in tech. And it was only in the past few years that I learned about tech and activism and organizing and these movements like No Tech for Apartheid and the Tech Workers Coalition, and even projects where you can build things, you know, the whole Tech for Good projects like Tech for Palestine, where they're building features to show solidarity with Palestinians, building lists of brands to boycott and things like that, that have been really inspiring to me. And so I think overall, just some takeaways is to think about like our responsibilities as tech workers and integrity workers to speak out against harms from these platforms and the biased policies that have been suppressing marginalized voices and have been contributing to what's happening in the world today. And the acknowledgement that our work as engineers or ICs isn't really done in a vacuum, and to really educate ourselves on how this fits into the world that we live in, in ways that we can get involved in organizing and advocacy efforts and being a voice for groups that aren't really in the same rooms that, you know, we're in at these tech companies, whether it's a big tech company or a small tech company, there's always ways to get involved. And yeah, I'm very passionate about this subject, and I'm really happy that we got a chance to discuss it on the podcast today, Alice. And ever since I made this transition into public interest tech, there's been like, I think across the board, a stirring from a lot of people in the industry that are feeling a little more interested in moving the needle or pushing in ways that they didn't feel like they could before, or understanding that there's more that they could get involved with. And that's why I always pitch like these practitioner fellowships, or thinking about how, you know, you can work at this intersection of tech for good and tech ethics and responsible technology. And I think we have to be eternal optimists to be able to do the work that needs to be done, despite how much of a toll it takes on us. And I'm always happy to talk, and I'm glad we're getting this conversation started on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Netta. It was a real pleasure to chat with you. I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alice.
One note here, the Integrity Institute, who hosts this podcast, has a policy against whistleblowing and whistleblowers as part of the membership. Just thought that was something important to note at the end of this particular episode and conversation. This episode was produced, edited, and hosted by me, Alice Hunsberger. The music is by Zhao Chen, and thank you to the Integrity Institute for making it possible.